space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilization, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Greetings, salutations, and welcome to Retrek. I'm Captain Jim, and with me are Admiral Elliot.
Hi there.
And Dr. Squee.
Dragon!
And we are marking ourselves safe from the Bell riots, which concluded in the early hours of this morning / late hours of last night.
I tell you, the amount of people who were posting up a couple of days ago, it's like, you can't say that yet. What are you wanting to tempt fate? You might get killed yet. Like,
exactly, that's it.
Well, strictly speaking, because of the time delays between us and America, there's 8 hours time difference. So strictly speaking, it actually happened, the Bell riots happened on the 4th of September for us in England.
For us, yeah, the conclusion of it will have been, yeah.
So we are actually going out on the correct date for an English podcast.
Which, again, we plan these things so far in advance. And which brings us on to, this is our 250th episode.
Woo! And I hope those people, look. All I'm saying is, if they did wrongly say they were safe from the Bell riots and then they died, they might put it upon themselves. But I hope they survive to see our 250th episode. That's all I'm saying.
That's it. And I hope the ones who mark themselves safe are safe, you know.
Yeah. Just because they tempted fate doesn't mean we wish them.
This is the thing.
Brought fate upon themselves.
We live in 2024 England. We know not to say out until the riots are definitely done.
People who were saying, there was actually a post I saw earlier about the Bell riots going, it's like, oh, well, that didn't happen then. And it's like, have you not been paying attention to the last couple of years? Like, even if you're in America, you only have to look back a few years
we'll talk about it as we go through, but the thing the Bell riots got wrong is the people who started it. It was kind of the other side of the coin that were actually doing the rioting. But anyway, before we move on to talking about past tense, we do have some Trek news, which I'm sure everyone's aware of. But we just want to mark the passing of James Darren, who of course played Vic Fontaine in Deep Space Nine. As we're covering a season 3 episode where Vic was not in it by that point, so we won't be talking about him today, though we did talk about him a lot during our coverage of the Dominion War.
Yeah.
And I think we agreed that we're all fans of Vic.
Yeah. It's such a fun little conceit. I love the fact that they made him a kind of like a hologram who was knowing as well, was something a bit different. And as they kind of allude to in the episode where they introduce him, it was very much of the time, it's like they were fixers, they knew what was going on, so it fit the character really well. And a genuine, like real deal musician. He was in the Gidget films, I think it was called. He was the real deal. He was in the Guns of Navarone as well as
TJ Hooker with William Shatner.
I mean, this guy had the bona fides. I think we'll always remember him now as Vic Fontaine. But
Vic Fontaine, yeah. Absolutely.
What a long tale of a career, though. To have that as just your one of your last big credits.
Yeah, that was like his pension fund, basically, and he did very well with it. And it's a sad loss, as it always is when we lose someone in the Star Trek community. But I think Vic's someone who the character particularly does have a warm place in everybody's heart for Vic Fontaine, I think.
Yeah.
Also, generally speaking,
if I'm correct, doesn't the Guns of Navarone have Gregory Peck in it?
Yes,
whose son, of course, is Ethan Peck, who is Peck.
There we go.
Wheels within wheels, always with Star Trek.
6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, Star Trek edition.
6 degrees of Vic Fontaine. We'll play that next week, maybe.
Oh, yeah, that'd be good. Anyway, but we are going to talk about the episode Past Tense, which, as we alluded to, was a season 3 Deep Space Nine two-parter. and the date. It was a time travel one, but it was one of them where they do the thing of going, we're traveling back in time, but it's to the future of the viewer. So it was one of the first times we got like what 21st century Star Trek universe looks like. And it wasn't nice, but the fact that the date has just passed, the episode began on Friday and ended, as I say, early hours of this. Well, actually, the episode today? Ended this morning, today.
Yeah. We're so topical.
The actual riots that take place, yeah.
Oh, God, I just finished clearing up outside. You wouldn't believe the mess from the riot. Jesus, it's like it went from all the way from LA to here. It was mad. Was it
well,
LA?
It's that. No, they
well, can't. I think, strictly speaking, actually, are the riots sort of ongoing after Gabriel?
Well,
it sort of starts them, and that's why, because of that building, that starts the riots.
It starts the thing, and they do say that there's riots breaking out in other places, yeah. But I think the movement gets wrapped up, and there's time the change begins. Anyway, we'll go through it because
Can I just tackle something which, like, it's throughout the episode, so it's in a specific moment. Yeah. It always bugged me, even when I was a kid, that they set things so close to now, basically. Mm. So it would have been 30 years in the future at the time, 40, whatever.
Just short of 30.
Just short
of 30 years.
This will have been made, what, 97?
Something 96, like that.
97. So it's about, not far off 30 years it was set in the future.
For me, I'm quite happy for them to take a stab at computers and things like that, which do change rapidly and everything. But it's the sheer gall and fucking hubris of deciding the tie, which has lasted for centuries. Like, you know, one version of the other. Okay, we went from actually tying it to tying it in a knot, but that would suddenly become a little collar thing. Like, it's just, come on, certain things leave alone. They're not going to change in 30 years.
It's one of them, like, we talked about when they had the shades, you know, the sunglasses in Picard, and we said, well, it's one of those designs that there's no need to change it. You don't have to make futuristic-looking shades, whereas they have tried to do futuristic-looking ties. Well,
that was a thing, though, wasn't it? It's like some will have gone there, right, they'll have probably looked at what was coming through Fashion Paris show and all
maybe,
that,
yeah.
And all that, and sort of extrapolated from that sort of thing. Of what was shown on the catwalk, and like, I don't know if you've ever seen ever any of the shit that comes out on the catwalk.
Oh yeah,
but people, apart from massive movie stars on the red carpet, nobody ever wears any of this stuff.
No, it's true.
It's really bizarre that this is the future of fashion, but no one ever wears it. So there's a disconnect between what the fashion world is saying is going to be fashionable to what reality is. It doesn't actually work. And you can look back and it never works. So I don't know why these people are even carry on doing it and these big fashion houses are allowed to continue.
I agree. I just think, like, just stick to things which are likely to change within 30 years. Even if the tie did change and you put on a traditional tie, I'm sure they're not going to be outlawed in 30 years. Like, you know, you're on a safer bet with a traditional tie.
And,
while
we're covering sort of things that they got wrong.
I want to go back to this thing with the tie. Like you said, that it never changed. Actually, if you go back roughly the same amount of time, for what this has jumped forward, you had the stupid massive clipper ties everyone was going round in.
Kippers,
so the tie does massively
if
change.
If they
flattened or
thinned it, if they just said everyone's wearing really thin ties, fair enough. That's a fair swing. That's a variation on the theme. To say it's just going to be a weird thing that goes around your neck for no, like, that just looks weird. And it just, again.
I'll be honest, I didn't even notice it this time, but I can remember now what you're on about.
Like,
but
to be fair, I think if you looked at the homeless in Sanctuary District, what they were wearing, that was actually pretty well nail on the head.
Yeah, hoodies
nailed it. But what the people outside of that were going around in, way off the mark.
Yeah, everyone in the Sanctuary District look great. They look like a bunch of wankers in the rich, yeah. rich places.
Oh,
rich,
I mean,
they probably
yeah.
ask for the money on whatever's on Fashion Week. So that's probably they. One of them saw it on a program, and they all start dressing like. No one else in that time zone is dressed like that. Just them.
I'm just
actually,
looking
I like
at
that.
The,
that's my retcon.
I'm looking at the pictures now. I mean, it's more of a. I was going to say it's more of a cravat. It's not. It's more of like a dog collar, isn't it? Like,
yeah. I think that's their production.
Now, I wonder if that's saying maybe because it's America, and as we see now, you've got the Christians moving a lot.
Yeah,
into the
maybe.
Right wing. Maybe it's because of the Christian movement that they've got everyone in dog collars.
Maybe what that's it. Maybe.
I hope everyone watching has enjoyed Thai Talk. That's us for this week.
Yeah. I mean, look, let's be honest. If Trump wore a dog collar, you'd have a load of idiots next day walking around with dog collars.
Oh, yes, you know, the disturbing thing is, when
that's all it'd say.
When all I could think of was Trump with his big ties, and I was thinking, like, oh, maybe that would be the fish. I didn't say it, but I thought that, and so that's disturbing. We both thought of Trump.
Like let's be honest, it's only a few weeks ago that they were all wearing Tampax on the ear.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Well, exactly. So, anyway.
I mean, look, it's an assassination. Grace is fucking it. Sorry, anyway. That's another thing.
The
this
other...
episode might get a bit political at times.
It calls for it. The other thing we'll cover that they were way out on was the internet or the interface.
Actually, I was off to say they're not that far out, actually.
Oh, they are. You've got to come round my office to use my interface terminal, otherwise you can't get access.
Well,
should be a box monitor.
They underestimated it.
That say subscription services, so he can afford the subscription service to the interface.
Yeah.
You have the interface or internet, so I don't think they're far off the mark there.
But
you had when he started using it, it starts flashing up adverts. That happens all the time with bloody pop-ups.
Yeah, what I'm saying is they underestimated how ubiquitous it would be and how easy to access and how portable it'd be.
Yeah.
But the concepts, I remember watching it at the time going, oh, that's an evolution of what we've got now. But at the time, we had dial-up, you know.
And it's like the computers, and they were very way off the mark with what the size of the computers.
They're still boxes. Yeah, they didn't think we'd have tablets.
But they had everyone using, it was all touchscreen. So they got the touchscreen right.
Mm.
But they were all using, the pointers. You know, like you get this... the stylus with some
force. Yeah, noticed that.
And everyone was using the stylus. But that was very much cutting-edge technology for the time of how touchscreen was working. So there were,
the stylus thing, you could argue, because even though they were ridiculous and they went out of fashion, and even Steve Jobs said, why would you spend all that money on a stylus? It's ridiculous. Then Apple, after Jobs died, have released the still available Apple Pen, even though he spoke out against it so many times. So
it was the stylus was more of a practicality when touch screens didn't have as many points on them, so you needed something that for precision, whereas now they're that advanced that you just whap your finger on it and you're fine. Yeah,
but
is that WAP as in the song? Because that's you don't put that on the.
No, it's WAP, like, WAP with an H.
Now you get your new phone, and you even tell it what you think where the dot is for how you touch it. It calibrates to how you can it
or
not properly.
Well, like a picture is just ladies there goes like right, just going to access my phone with my WAP.
Indeed. So past tense part
one. I didn't write the song.
Who was it? What was the name now?
Cardi B, wasn't it?
Cardi B, that was it. They didn't predict Cardi B. Actually, they did, because she is as vanished from popular culture as this episode portrays her to be. So, anyway, right. So, the setup of the episode is the whole crew, the entire cast, is going to Earth. To give a briefing on the Gamma Quadrant, except
so
Quark. And Quark makes a video call so that Armin Shimmerman can get his credit for the episode. He doesn't appear in episode two, but they do manage to get him in right at the start.
And I love the fact that these kind of like, there's so few moments on the Defiant in the kind of present to Star Trek.
Yeah.
And they give like just the first lines which they give, the first line which they give Bashir is just the more, I hate when there's like a really clunky line and you never say it like this. First of all, they argue over like, oh no, I think that sea would be better purple. I think it'd be better green. It's like, we've seen their home planets. Neither of them have water that color, which for
that's
a start,
true.
Like, we see both their home planets later, but we'll ignore that. And then you've got Bashir has to deliver the line. Poor Sid has to deliver the line. Well, I guess home's home, no matter what color the water is. Who the fuck speaks like that? Like, there's no place like home, no matter what the color of the water. Just don't. Just cut to the, like, just send them
he's
to the transporter.
He's trying to make peace. It's Bashir trying to mediate.
This is one of the weakest,
Colons
ever. I feel really bad.
It's like the chit-chat they try and put in is not of the highest order.
It's like, you can tell as well, this is early Defiance, because there's still very few actual runes in use.
Yeah, true.
Yes. It's,
everything happens in the transporter closet, and I am going to call it a closet in this episode, because
that's reasonable.
We do see the transporter room in later episodes when they get budget to build a new transporter room. But in this episode, it's a transporter closet.
I probably upgraded them.
And the bridge, and that's all we have.
Well, everything else will be delivered on Tuesday or during the season finale, as it actually was.
Can I also give a shout out as well, just because we're talking about clunky dialogue aboard the Defiant. I felt so sorry later on in the episode, and may as well tackle it at the same kind of breath, when O'Brien / Colmeany had to deliver the worst techno babble about chronotons.
You like me to tell you how the time travel works?
No, I mean, we could get to that later.
Don't think there's anything wrong with his techno babble here, because all it is chronoton particles from the cloaking device that they become lodged in the uplated armor matrix.
Of course.
And then because we have a temple.
Are you looking at something off screen there, I wonder?
I actually wrote this down.
Yeah, I got all of it. Yeah, this is word for word, isn't it?
There was a temporal surge caused in the temporal, in the chronoton particles.
Of course.
I mean,
in the micro singularity passing through the solar system. And that shifted the chronoton particles into a high state of temporal flux.
Oh, now I get
so it. High state of temporal polarization.
I mean,
and then when they beamed through it, that did something.
It all timed at the same time.
Also, exactly. Brian delivers a line, it's like, oh, they're temporal particles. Well, what's happened? Oh, I don't know, but I'm going to find out. You've just said it's temporal particles.
Chronoton particles.
I'm sure he says temporal.
No, it does, because the chronoton particles are being put into a high state of temporal polarization.
No, that's later. In the earlier bit where it goes, it passed through some temporal, because I remember, because people pronounce it temporal or temporal.
Mm-hmm. And no, the transporter being passed through the chronoton particles that are lodged into the uplated armor matrix.
I know, he says that later on in the episode, Rain Man. But earlier on, he mentions temporal particles, because it really caught him off. It's like, we just said it's temporal particles. Take a stab, might be to something to do with time travel.
Just before we came on air, I actually wrote it down, and the only time he says temporal is when he says he got moved into a state of high state of temporal polarization.
That, I mean, I'm talking like that when he starts talking about it, he mentions temporal, because I remember thinking, what the fuck? Of course, it's time travel. And it's like, really fucking clunky. Given the rest of the episode so good, I sort of want to highlight, because the rest of the episode's so good. Highlight.
I'm going to give this a thumbs up, because we've seen a lot of time travel in Star Trek. And this actually makes a lot more sense than a lot of the other reasons for time travel in Star Trek. Because he explains where chronoton particles come from. And Costa called Chrono, we can assume that's Chronos, which is for time. So I'm happy
maybe
with
that's
that.
What I'm thinking. Maybe
they come from the cloaking device that the Romulans lent them. So I'm happy with that. They get stuck to the ship because of the ablative armor matrix. So I'm happy with that. I think the micro singularity exploded. I'm a bit confused how that happened.
That just happens. Micro singularities are exploding all the time.
Don't get me wrong, as a science nerd, like, I love the fact that all makes sense. I'm just saying, to a viewer, just fucking give us something a bit there was some time particles, the transport beam went through it, blim, blam, bloom, they're in the past. Like,
at least have
one of your people, like, have Kira going, it's like, what the fuck? And he goes, oh, well, we passed through some time particles. So
well, we do get that later because we get Odo when O'Brien and Kira are off to start going back in time.
Yeah, that's
fine. And we get O'Brien goes, so let me get this, Odo goes, so let me get this right. If we focus the transporter beam through the polarized chronoton particles, we can move back in time. And he goes, yeah, of course.
Yeah, but that isn't making it any more user-friendly, that language.
And, of course it is.
My point is more, at the time, when he delivers this ridiculous kind of like long... Again, it makes sense, but it's a lot of science in one burst. And everyone just goes, oh, yeah, that makes perfect sense. Like, every viewer at home is going to follow that.
I mean, I didn't follow the exact ins and outs of it, but
anyone who's got a basis in Latin gets it straight away. As soon as it says chronoton, we all know that it's talking about time.
He hasn't got a basis in Latin and time travel.
You get the basic mechanics of beaming through time.
I'm sorry, but by the time this episode has come out, we've had 30 years of Star Trek time travel. So I think as viewers of Star Trek, we are well versed in the mechanics of time travel by now. So we can cope with a bit of techno babble.
I'm just saying, usually when they have techno babble like this, they give you a little bit of a simplified version right after, not later on in the episode. I'm just saying.
It doesn't matter. The point they beamed through time.
They did.
So one other thing on O'Brien, I do enjoy the fact that he's like, hey, I'm enlisted, I don't have to go to your meetings.
I did like that. Yeah. Listen, man, I don't have to come to your boring meal.
And you know what else? He's a union man as well.
I
love the fact that it's never an episode where it isn't clear that he's one of the people. It's just.
They beam down and straight away they get nicked. And they get nicked by Dick Miller, who is just that guy in that thing. He's one of the original that guys in that thing. He is in everything, isn't he, fella?
Do you know how much he's in everything? Later on the day, after watching that, I watched part one before going to the cinema to see Terminator. Mm-hmm. He pops up in Terminator.
He's the guy I made close early today for his plasma rifle in the 40-watt range.
I was like, I just saw you. Like it was just so weird. But it was in everything at the time.
Yeah. There's a few actors like that, and you might not know the names because they're not major parts. But every time you see them, you think, hell. And once you've recognised them and you're looking at things from that sort of, probably over a 20, 30-year period, you go,
The character actors are the glue that holds Hollywood.
Yeah. He was in Star Trek before. He was in The Big Goodbye. I think he was a newspaper seller in the Dixon Hill. He was Gremlins, possibly his biggest role, in terms of the amount he has to do. So he's always a great actor to see. And it's almost like your series has arrived when Dick Miller turns up to play a little role. Because of course he's going to be in it at some point.
We will get to it later, but there is a certain touchstone of Star Trek as well as motion picture history, which comes up later on in the episode, but we'll get there. I should also just point out, because we talked about this off mic, It was the 4K re-release of Terminator. We're not just really behind on movies in Southampton, just in case anyone was wondering.
No, you know they've made sequels to that.
Yeah, no, like, yeah. I mean, I joke about that, but I am.
Are you doing them all? Are you looking forward to number three?
I'm going to watch number two with my son.
Yeah, I think so. This one, so. Stop at two for the cinema revisit. But
I think they are actually.
Anyway, so Bashir and Sisko, I should say, the ones that get taken away for vagrancy. I really like the way they do it visually, how Dax doesn't get taken, because they've obviously beamed in, and it's over a sort of a subway thing. So Dax has beamed in slightly lower, or possibly beamed in midair and fallen.
Yeah.
And I like that they did that. So you get the explanation of, yeah, they've beamed into the same place, but because it's on different levels.
Am I allowed to be a little OCD here, though?
If you wish.
It's a little too far, but it's not right next to, like, they need to be right next to the subway for that to work. Sorry, I know it's really
well.
Really
I think you've got, I think you can also imagine that they've landed staggered, maybe, and immediately been hit by someone which had moved them away from where it's because they're not
hit by, they've been struck with some sort of smooth criminal,
possibly.
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah. But, no, I do like the explanation,
but they'd obviously been knocked unconscious, and we know that the badges have been stolen off.
Bashir and Sisko.
So they've obviously been assaulted.
Criminal.
Yeah, so they've been assaulted. So I think we allowed them not to be exactly where they
Do you know what? No, thank you, Elliot. You've made it right for me. Because I also like the idea that Dax might have fallen a little and that's why she passed
and that's
out. And they've staggered. Yeah, that all makes... No, I like it.
And Dax meets the rich guy. And, you know, obviously a lot of this episode is talking about political issues and things like that, but I do find it interesting. Obviously it's by the construction of the plot, but we're very deliberately setting up the two men of color are immediately arrested and taken to this zone, whereas the white woman isn't.
Yeah,
and some of it's happenstance, but there's definitely, you know,
yeah.
I don't think that's coincidence by the writers that they decided to do it that way.
It's deliberately done that. It's the two people of colour.
That's so funny.
The ones who get arrested. That you, two people of colour, unconscious, knocked up on the street. You're being robbed. Nah.
Yeah. A pretty young woman. Let's take you off to meet the rich people.
That sort of leads into a point I thought, because I think you guys are totally right, but I didn't pick up on that, but it seems so obvious now. But it's like, it's kind of interesting, because I did think that if you were doing this now, there would probably be rightly more of a point, the fact that they are of colour, and the fact that disproportionately people of colour are locked up in the, you know, do end up being poorer, especially in America, but also in this country, they do end up in positions of kind of less power and everything. I think you would have spiked that more now. And like, you know, the stuff with the Black Lives Matter really seems
to change. I think, like,
It's like, if you look in the UK with Stop and Search, it's shown that if you person of colour, you're six times more likely to be stopped for Stop and Search than if you're white.
Yeah,
there was someone at work who I wanted to fucking punch. Like, sometimes it's just not worth it, because you know it's not going to work in your favor if you say anything back. But it's like, when they got rid of Stop and Search, it's like, I mean, that's why criminals getting out there. It's like exactly what you just said, Elliot, was what I was thinking. It's like, it fucking has been shown to not work disproportionately. Stop and Search black people,
yeah,
it's fucking bullshit. It's just,
yeah. And I think also in a post 9/11 world, the fact that Alexander Siddig is of Arab descent would have been lent into there, and there'd have probably been more of a story to tell in that regard. But I think in terms of the black take on it all, I think you can feel that this is a script that Avery Brooks really sunk his teeth into, like the political activist. I mean, there's obviously parallels there to Malcolm X and things like that. So you can feel this is one where I don't think Avery Brooks ever comes across that he's phoning in a performance, but you can tell the ones that when it
really
touches on social issues that he really cares about, you get a different level of performance from him. And I think we get that here.
And there was something which I was kind of like very torn on with this episode, because something I'm so conscious of after hearing about how the studio made him like grow his hair out, shave his beard so he didn't look too thuggish, which is basically
it was so that it didn't look like his previous character. They wanted to, because he'd been
that's what they off, said, but a lot of people have,
I know there's a lot of things, but like,
yeah,
the official reason was that we want to distance it from it, people thinking we've got Spencer for hire. We want Avery Brooks. We don't want that character.
Yeah, he really wanted to keep that look, and they've really fought. Like, there's so many characters look exactly like they did in other parts in Star Trek. That doesn't really hold water. It was clearly to make him look like all black guys at the time. Like, if you look like back at the Cosby Show and everything, which you won't look back on, I appreciate. But like, but you know what I mean? It's like that hair and no beard and everything. It was It was basically
it's sort of like you're meant to look like the sort of black man that we want to have living next door to us, majority of black men that we're scared of for no reason.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like I was really conflicted because I'm sort of always aware of that when I see him in the earlier series. However, the one thing it did lend to this episode was because he had such a quote-unquote sort of like sanitized look and everything, when he did act really impassioned and really like, there's one moment where he just like looked really exasperated and angry with everything, it almost carried more weight because he was looking the way what do you see what I mean? It's like, you know, later on he looks badass all the time, so when he acts badass it's like, yes, of course, look at him.
It added to him going from mild-mannered to all out badass, whereas when you look like a badass anyway, you can can speak mildly and you can act mildly, but you still look like a I get it. Then we were talking about how they didn't do the explanation of the time travel for the audience's benefit. But we do get that with the history, which I think is great. And it feels natural in this instance that you get Bashir saying, oh, actually, I don't really know a lot about this period of history, whereas Sisko goes, really into it.
Well, Bashir goes, doesn't he? He goes, I'm not massively familiar with it because it's a dark period and I don't enjoy reading it.
I've got a theory about that as well, because it's obviously they didn't know this at the time, but because we later on find out he's genetically engineered and super intelligent, I think he knows everything chapter and verse about this time. I think he's asking Sisko to find out what Sisko knows without tipping his hat.
Yeah.
But also, I think there is a side to him which is philosophically interested, where he is like... Like, you know, again, it's retconning, but it's like... I like the idea that he was like asking because like he wants to know what Sisko's opinion is of this time without.
It's weird with Bashir, isn't it? Because we know from later episodes when it becomes genetically engineered
and super
intelligent and all that. How many times is actually, if you look back on it, knowing that, how many times he's actually playing the idiot who doesn't know stuff?
And he's got to decide what he knows and what he doesn't and keep it straight.
And you've also got to think, hold on, you're in this really dangerous situation. You've gone back in time, you're stuck. You just need to get out of it. You can't affect anything. So you're in danger of breaking the temporal prime directives and all sorts. And you're going to play the idiot to just protect yourself from being genetically engineered. I actually do know a lot about this period.
I don't think anything he does potentially jeopardizes the mission. And I think it is conceivable that maybe he doesn't know all the ins and outs. But mind, if we go by the slightly revised timeline that Strange New Worlds presents us with, this is all part and parcel of the build-up to the eugenics wars, so now, Bashir would have a vested interest in knowing about
it.
I actually watched an interesting one on YouTube, someone I follow, and he was talking about like what Strange New Worlds have just done with the Khan story.
Mm.
And they basically, like, this episode had been made roughly about 97, I think.
Yeah.
Which is when Khan was initially meant to have left Earth because of the eugenics war from Star Trek. And that's been just been written by Strange New Worlds last year.
Wasn't it previously somewhere as well, I think? On some of the other,
It's always been a bit in a bit of a state of flux.
Yes, but it's that thing that, okay, we've changed it in Strange New Worlds, so certain events have altered now in that time, how that timeline's working. But at the moment, when DS9 have gone back, the events of changing time of Strange New Worlds haven't happened yet. So the Bell Rights is still how they think. But at some point, we'll go back in time again and we'll change that, but it's not necessary.
Yeah, true.
I do also like the fact that they kind of tie it in with Picard as well. They've got the zones I mentioned.
Yeah. But yeah. He also came out with a nice one as well, that how do you act when you do catch up with something like this to your actual time? And do the writers have to think, oh, shit, we need to rewrite this and we need to alter it and cope with an excuse why it's different? Or do you let us as an audience go, I really enjoyed this episode from the 90s and just leave it be? And if it in 20, 30 years' time, someone has a great story that does happen to alter the events of this episode, that's fine. But the writers shouldn't sit down and go, no, I need to do this, because then you're not going to get the best reason. You're going to get something forced.
I think it's only if you're referencing the time, and like obviously we know now that didn't happen in the 90s. Yeah. So you just, when you're referring to it, you go, oh, when that happened in 2030, you know, you just make up and like you just say a new year, we'll retcon it. It's fine. It's, you know, all these shows have time travel in them. So you can just say like there was some time travel shenanigans, it moved time, but they kept like, you know, we've now got within Star Trek several different agencies which keep time on track.
Yeah.
But one of them just had to move that event because time change. Great, fine. That's all we need. Yeah, it's easy.
And for all we know, the events of Sisko and Bashir, what they've done anyway, we've been swapping bodies with Bell, even though they've put the timeline right by the time it catches up to DS9 and Star Trek, it might have pushed everything out of whack slightly. So,
no, I agree.
It's all weird, but I think that's the exactly. Enjoy for a show, and we shouldn't have to worry about putting it right in the show.
No. Basically Sisko explains what's going to happen. So the Bell Riots are coming and why they can't interfere with any of it because it's so important and it leads to where they're going to go and everything. And this is where we sort of get them introduced to the Sanctuary District and the way it works and everything. And you get this thing, there's sort of slang terms used, but for different kind of social classes. Yeah. Like there's the gimmies, who are the people who want money, want handouts, are looking for work kind of thing. Then there's what they call the dims, which are the people who have mental illnesses. Yeah, and then there's the ghosts who are just rough, really.
Yeah,
I mean, but it's kind of funny because as much as I think this episode handles all that stuff really well, I could even see the difference of how, again, like there's a few things we've already pointed out that how it was handled then and how it would be handled now. Like, no one seems to have a problem with the term dims. That never gets mentioned once. No. Like, they say about the gimmies and the ghosts, because they're outside of society, even within the subset of society. No. Both Bashir and Sisko both refer to the ghosts like in really negative terms, and it's never questioned. It's like, well, maybe they're disenfranchised from society for a reason, even though the ghost we're dealing with mainly through this episode does stand good in the end. They seem quite happy to sort of neg on the ghosts, where it's like, well, they're people too, you know. It's like, I think even better now, but
I was thinking, like, you're saying here, out they're going, like, they're calling them dings and not saying anything, and we shouldn't be calling people who've got mental illness dings, but. Yeah. If you look at Trump in his over the last 8 years, he has problem insulting people. His supporters have no problem jumping on whatever he's decided he's going to call somebody, jumping on it and using that as a term constantly. So you can see how quickly.
You can see how it becomes institutionalized.
It becomes institutionalized. and the norm for them to do it, and they think this is perfectly acceptable. We don't like that class of person. We're going to call them this, and that is perfectly acceptable.
Don't get me wrong. I could picture that happening now, and there being like with the shifts in the wrong direction.
I just meant
people from like Bashir and Cisco being from the future. I think they should have been the ones to question those terms. The problem
should have been holding a mirror up to it.
That's what I meant. It's like, the people of this time, like, that sadly, it's like, far too true.
It's like you just look at it, how refugees now are called illegal immigrants, and they're not illegal until you have an asylum application turned down, and then you don't leave. That's when you become illegal, but it's now become the norm that we're calling anybody who's seeking asylum or a refugee, we're calling them illegal and criminal straight away.
We don't call all of them that. Anyone who goes from this country somewhere else is just an expat. That's fine. It's just everyone else.
But
that has become it's become a norm on the mainstream media that the
And
I agree with what Labour have done straight away, and they've got rid of that term, and they've got rid of the illegal in Parliament. They're not calling them that anymore.
Yeah.
And Bashir, to be fair, he does comment on the mental health thing. Like, he points out, like, you know, even the medicine of these days, they could help this man. And so part of it is going addressed. And another thing that's quite sort of prescient and familiar really is this idea that, well, you can't leave until you've got a job, but you can't look for jobs outside the district.
It's a catch-22.
That's so true of now. The bureaucracy which doesn't work, and the thing of like, you know, we claim to look after all our poor society, all you know, no one gets left behind, but there's so many people who fall into these gaps where the paperwork doesn't work, or the system doesn't work, or the thing, the schemes which are meant to connect together don't.
I was off to say this thing about the guy who's mentally ill who's not getting medicine. That's just typical in America, that people can't afford medication. Did you see, I don't know if you're watching, John Oliver, he does his talk show in America
last week tonight,
and last week they've set up a debt recovery office. So they've set themselves up a business as debt recovery, and they've bought a load of medical debt for, what was it, $1 for every 60,000 of debt. So he bought $15 million worth of debt that people owed, and then just give it away and went, yeah, we're wiping this off. And just did it on the show, and he went, but he's there going, isn't this ridiculous? It's cost us, he said, it's cost us so many tens of thousands of dollars to do this, to set up this company. We bought all this debt to claim. How obscene is that, that we're allowed to pay so little to own these people's lives for this much money?
Yeah,
I'm going to go on a tangent, but very quickly, just because John Oliver's done this before, and he is such a legend. Because like he opened up a super PAC to show how obvious it was, and he like showed how like what colluding with the people who like the super PACs in favor. So he's talking to the person. It's like, oh, but we haven't mentioned the PAC, so we're not colluding, are we? It's like, no, we're not colluding. Wink. And like they didn't. Wink is legal. All this is legal, and he raised over $1 million. He goes like, oh, I've got over $1 million reasons to be thankful for the super PAC, and he donated it all to charity. He does these stunts to prove a point, but then it really benefits people in the end. It's amazing. So,
to set up her business and buy a load of medical debt and just give it and went right.
Yeah,
I think it was 2,100 people it ended up in it that they just wiped off the medical debts that were literally going to put them in poverty. Normal people and just went, none of you saw any money anymore.
Even though we may not like, I mean, you can also show it as a metaphor for this country, because even though people aren't being rounded up into camps exactly, you get people who like are on such ridiculous waiting lists for mental health as well as physical health problems, and they end up on the streets because of it. And it's like, this is it works so well for our society as well as America.
Absolutely.
Sadly so.
And some of the stuff like they touch on, like I think Bashir is quite a good sounding board in this episode. Because it raises the idea that, you know, I mean, the quote's been doing the rounds, but where he says about, like, people forgetting how to care, causing this sort of treatment of other people. And, yeah, you know, that obviously touches on a lot that's been going on in society for a long time, this idea that people are able to just disassociate themselves from the fact that they're talking about other human beings rather than just numbers or statistics.
Yeah.
And he goes sort of further and questions Sisko on, well, would this happen again if society collapsed? You know, even in Star Trek's future, could this sort of thing happen? And Sisko says he doesn't have an answer for it. He hopes that it isn't the case, but
I think if we look
the question in Homefront, where they and Paradise Lost and Homefront and Paradise Lost, whatever.
Homefront and Paradise Lost, the two-parter, yeah.
Yeah, so it's when they do get to the point whereby there's such mistrust.
Martial law.
On Earth, they call martial law, and it almost all goes away, but it's only because, like, they managed to sort of have their cake and eat it too. They show how easy it is for something like that to fall apart, but only because this is a hopeful future where we believe in each other, does it not? And that's the only difference between their time and ours, I feel like, it is what these two episodes say. It's like, the only difference is here, we don't have a framework where we believe in people, where we support people, where no one actually gets left behind. And it's just, even talking about this, getting me really emotional, because I'm a friend of mine who's a carer for her son. And at the moment, they're kind of threatening to take money away from her to kind of get night support, which, like, she works through the night, so she does night support, but day support, so she can actually get some sleep. And just fucking, like, this is how people end up on the street, because they don't have money to support themselves. And it's, if you've got a disabled child or anyone in your family who's got health problems, or kind of, like, you end up out of work, it's just fucking, this just seems so prescient. And it's like, all the differences in Star Trek's future is that we care about each other more and we look out for each other. It's fucking, sorry, mate. Sorry, back to you guys.
So, yeah, let's go to the time travel again then. So this is the bit that I don't like about the time travel in the whole episode. This concept that there's only so many chronotons, so we can only check so many time zones.
Which makes sense.
Which of course during the transport action.
I can accept that it makes sense, but they could just do a slingshot round the sun and travel to whichever time period they wanted.
Yeah, are you suggesting there's more than one type of time travel?
I am, and I think that it's trying to generate an artificial level of tension.
If you've
seen enough Trek, you'd be like, no.
I actually went back to check something on this, because you have O'Brien says how they're going to travel back, and it's by they're going to focus the transporter beam through the polarized chronotone particles.
Yeah,
and needed to check that it needed the polarized ones, because if it was just through the chronotone particles, I was thinking, hold on, they can make them as many of them as they want, just keep cloaking on and off.
Fair point.
And also, like, all they had to do to solve this, like, to do a perfectly standard check, which should be in all transporters, is the Doctor Who code, which is reversing the polarity of the neutron flow. That's all they
needed. Exactly. Well, yeah.
It did check the Heisenberg coping status.
It did.
And it did do a level one diagnostic on the. I'm trying to remember which part it was of the transporter.
Oh, that's great, but come on, do you need anything after you've checked the Heisenberg compensator? That is any Star Trek fan, any Trekkie worth their salt, had a little private moment when they mentioned the Heisenberg compensator. It's my favourite bit of Trek the Babel. I know I've told this story a billion times on here, but I just love it when Gene Roddenberry used to go to conventions. He was asked, how do Heisenberg compensates work, and he said, very well, thank you. That was his answer every time.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a MacGuffin named after the problem. It's genius. Name the solution after the problem.
It's like, how do the transporters work? They have Heisenberg compensators. Because it's the Heisenberg principle, isn't it? Of you have the Heisenberg compensate.
Yeah, it is a great conceit. So we end up Bashir and Sisko bond with this guy Webb because Bashir helps his son, and this is after they've swapped their uniforms for.
Does Bashir really help his son? Because his son is there lying in pain, about to die, massively suffering. And Bashir goes up to him and goes, "Does that hurt? Yeah. Does that hurt? No. Good, you've no broken ribs, you've no internal injuries. All you've got is a few cuts that need cleaning. If we've got something to clean his wounds out, it will be fine."
But the guy didn't know that. That's the point.
No, exactly.
Also, but his son was like dying. And as soon as Bashir goes, "You just need to clean your wounds out," he goes, "Oh, great, thanks, Doc. I feel much better now."
I mean, my problem was more with the uniform thing, just because it's like, okay, we get, like, I think there's even a line of dialogue in some of the Star Treks where they say it's about how the outfits, they're specially engineered to be cool in certain weather, hot enough.
Yeah, yeah.
But they don't know that. All they're saying is like, "Hey, that guy in the cool pajamas, we want to look like each other. Let's swap with them." Like, I don't get why they want to, like, are they meant to be visibly cleaner than their outfits?
Yeah, I think it's more that the uniforms are not covered in shit.
But can you see that they're not covered in shit and theirs are in that? I don't
know. Yeah, they probably don't smell.
We do get it later on in the episode that even 24th century rich people's clothes doesn't get covered in shit.
Yeah, true. I do enjoy, though, as that scene goes on and the way you start to work out where it's going, you're like, wait a minute, that guy's pretty much the same build as Sisko, and this guy's pretty much the same build as Bashir. I wonder what's going to happen here.
Oh, is there a conspiracy error here, though?
Go on.
It's foreshadowing the end of the episode, but like Sisko takes the place of Bell. At the end, they swap IDs to put his ID on a dead body.
Yeah.
But they've already seen him on the screens, and they even have a picture in a later episode of three men of Sisko looking like Sisko. Does no one go, it's like, well, that's not him?
Maybe it's not photo ID. Maybe them ID cards don't have your photo, they just have your name and everything else.
I think they've got
everybody would be visibly not him.
Oh, so if it's just a dead body and it says Gabriel Bell or whatever.
I've got a feeling that the security guard has done some stuff.
Yeah, well, they go in.
That he's got a dead body and he's processed it and he's put his face and his name on the ID.
Yeah, we'll just assume that he's done it somewhere. I haven't watched
the news that day.
I'm quite happy in my head canon that there's been a dead body and the security guard has used all the bits and pieces he's got in his security office to hide. He's gone out in a bag and he's just processed it that this is Gabriel Bell and put that card up.
All I'm asking for, Elliot, to add to your headcanon is everyone who's in the morgue who sees their head later, they have not watched the news all day.
Well, I don't think there'll even be a post-mortem of him. I think they'll just stare through him straight in the incinerator and have done with it.
Actually, probably, yeah, at the time. That's
most
the
likely.
I don't think there'll be any waste of tax dollars on doing post-mortem to the dead rioters.
I think they'll just stare through him straight
in the incinerator. Yeah, done. Gone.
Yeah, they're not going to solve all those problems that second. You're right. No, I like that. Thank you. Yeah, you're really helping me with my case of this today.
So I appreciate it. So, yeah, this is where they get in the fight over food, and it ends up with Gabriel Bell dying. And at that point, the Defiant loses contact with Starfleet, which is, this is always this weird thing that they do with time travel, where they've travelled back to is running in concert with what's going on in the present. Arguably, it should have been as soon as they've been back, they lost cut. But anyway, that's by the by.
I think, well,
I don't know, but they're connected through the temporal thing that they made.
Of course, yes. And I think in Prodigy this season, they actually explained it. So we'll let it go.
Like, they do explain that the reason the Defiant isn't affected is because when the microscopic subspace anomaly exploded, at the point that they were doing the transport through the Kroton particles, it created a temporal bubble around them.
Yeah, Jim. How did you not?
I'm sorry.
Like,
I know. I don't know. I have no idea. That was really.
And I think that's why they're moving concurrently.
Of course, it is. Yeah.
To your point, Jim, though, isn't it also? This is, I think, the only method of time travel they don't include in the last
trilogy. And we know why now. So there's a really good line by Dax where she's talking to the rich guy. And he says, well, you know, the Sanctuary District's just for helping people get back on their feet and blah, 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 blah. And she says, well, if that's all it's for, why do they build a wall around it? And yeah, that's a really, really good line. Yeah. And it actually forces him to hold up a mirror to it and actually start to question it, because this is speaking to sort of rich privilege, really, that they can ignore it because they don't have to deal with it.
It's probably not just rich privilege, it's probably middle class. You probably literally not just the lower class and not even working class. You've got the people who become redundant, immigrants, whatever, who are thrown into the sanctuary district. Yeah. And you're literally putting out the propaganda that you're helping them rehabilitate and get new jobs and all that. And everyone's thinking, yeah, this is great. Yeah. How much is this costing? And they're probably thinking, wow, this is only costing them so many million. Because they've had to get section off a lump of the city. So there's probably a huge estate's worth. Probably, like, we live across gates. So let's say the walled off cross gates. Or actually, no, they do Seacroft up the road.
Yeah, that would be first to go.
So they've walled off
Portsmouth in this area.
So what you probably all you've got is you've got an initial cost of building the wall
a very classy wall. Wall.
But at least this is at a size where you can actually make the ends meet and stop people just walking around the sides of it.
I think there's also a thing in there
what I was saying is, like, a cost-wise to the economy. So you've got the cost of building this huge wall around it, and then you've got an office, and what have we got? A couple of dozen people working this office?
Yeah.
For a sanctuary district?
I can add something to this as well. You advertise it as creating jobs, because building sanctuary district, building the walls, the people employed in there, you make it a net good. And you also say that it's like, hey, because you in the middle class, you're going to be us rich people one day. So you should be in support of this. But the reality is, the second that they miss a rent payment, anything, they get to be one of the ones.
Well, that was it's advertised that they're going to be the rich. Son was nearly died until Dr. Bashir put his healing hands on him.
Webb.
Because he says that he was a factory supervisor. He's literally a manager in a factory, lost his job, and he's in Sanctuary District.
But it's the same bullshit they do now. Like, I mean, again, it's another great parallel that they've picked up from the time, which is still well in playing today. It's like, it's that kind of lie that they get people fighting for the Tories and for kind of like people who say they're all about like wealth creation and everything, because you're going to be them. You're going to be them just in another year or two, you're going to be them. You never are. You've got more chance of becoming the poor people
who are fighting
and who need food banks. And you never quite get to the rich.
And I know, thankfully, it is still pretty extreme thinking, right, well, they're just going to build a wall around somewhere. But, you know, in this country, we had Priti Patel saying, let's take tents away from homeless people so they can't even have any shelter at night, you know.
Well at least she's not going to be the next leader of the Tories.
Yes, very true. But,
well,
they
did it with benches as well. Like, in I think in America, I don't think this has happened here, but I might be wrong.
It has happened here.
They carve out the middle bit and they advertise it as being for the disabled, so wheelchairs.
Disabled friendly, but it's for people
lying on
benches. They've done it in this country where they've added handbars into them. So they haven't cut out part of the bench, but where you'd have a big bench, there's now a couple of handbars here to make it more
I hadn't tweaked.
And that's what that's for.
Yeah, I hadn't tweaked that was what that was for, but you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
We're not a million miles away from this, though thankfully we are maybe a couple of miles. Anyway, so the episode finishes. We get the hostages taken by BC, who we'll talk about more next episode. And Sisko introduces himself as Gabriel Bell, thus setting in motion the rest of everything. It's not the tensest of all cliffhangers, but this is basically a movie.
You've got the original Gabriel Bell dying, which is a shock, and then you've got Sisko saying that he is this guy who we know is going to die.
Yeah,
it's not bad.
It's taken on the persona of somebody that we know is due to die in 2 days.
But as Bashir points out right at the start of the next episode, Sisko's like, yeah, but I'm not Gabriel Bell. He comes across really thick in this bit, Sisko. Well, I can't die. I'm not Gabriel Bell. And Bashir's like, yeah, but everyone else thinks
only
you are.
Only us two. No.
Yeah. And Sisko's like,
you might think you are.
Sisko's just like, damn, I did not think this plan through.
It really is one of those things of like, we need to say something to the audience. Let's just make this person really thick right now.
Yeah.
Like they do it so often.
I mean, it's fun. Well, sort of thing Sisko shouldn't have overlooked.
It's that thing that you've got to have Bashir say that because it's meant to add tension to the episode. It's not meant to make Sisko look big. It's there to add tension to the episode of, oh, is Sisko going to be all right? Oh, is our captain, character of our seventh season show going to survive this episode? What will we do for the other 4.5 seasons?
You think it's going to go to 7 series? I don't know.
This was before a mid-season break, so you never know. It might have been the end of Sisko. I doubt it, though.
They did have after the, I think it was the second series of Star Trek Next Generation, because I think it was Harley, when the writers got pissed off with the cast, and he threatened to do a plot line where they all died, and then there'd be a new crew on the Enterprise D looking for what happened to the original crew. So it almost
The threat's always there, isn't it? Yeah. So to inject a little bit of levity, we get these almost vignettes where we've got Kira and O'Brien beaming back to different timelines.
Just say it got broken, or just don't say anything at all. She goes, I broke my nose, and they laugh in her face.
That's the only thing that she says. And it's like, no one's looking at her, no one's asking her, but she just, I broke my nose.
Aren't they staring at her? And it's like there's just an awkward silence.
Like, I thought this was quite funny that he put a patch on her nose.
Yeah.
Because we saw so many times the original series, Spock would go back in time or something, and he put something round his head to cover his ears and all that. And it's like, yeah, and that's okay. We can put a headband on. What do we do about a nose? Oh, let's just bang a big plaster on it.
Yeah.
I also like the idea that because it was the 20s, I believe, when they laugh at her. And I would totally believe they've just come out of the speakeasy. They're pissed as farts.
Like, And I like that we get Sisko kind of taking control of the situation a bit. I really like that there's a little bit of a through line in the episode where you get him bonding, or him and BC initially, but then BC and Webb as well, about baseball, like the chatting away about baseball, and it's...
And they bring in Kid Bukai. Isn't he the character from the first series? That's nice.
So you get the bit where they're talking about who's the best team, and you can see that BC is warming to him. So at first he's not talking to him at all, and then it's like, oh, he knows about baseball, and he's like, okay, Bell, you settle this argument. Who was the better team? And it's a really subtle thing in the episode, but just the fact that it's showing how the bonding just through being normal people and through chit chat.
But and you've also got that same Stockholm Syndrome thing as well, where you've got the prisoners start bonding with the captors.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of that. Yeah.
For me, I felt like it was, as I said, like I felt like they were quite dismissive. Like every time Sisko Bashir mentioned the ghosts, they mentioned them so dismissively.
And I feel like his
character nicely reminds us that they are humans. Like there might be reason why he's dismissed. Like, you know, as much as I'm fucking vehemently against the riots which happened in this country, the anger which the far right managed to whip up, I think, was based on a lot of societal kind of unease around people being poor, people feeling any hope. And even though I don't excuse then taking down on people who kind of come into this country, at the same time, it's like there was something there for them to whip up, which was caused by the previous government, you know, it's like, and subsequent,
yeah,
I'm going to say, like before them. And it's like, you feel like that with this character, like what he's doing is not okay. It's not acceptable, but you get the feeling of there's a reason why they're that pissed off, that they've checked out of everything. And like,
yeah,
like,
definitely
Bashir win him back towards being a decent human being at some level.
BC's almost like one of these guys who's like, well, I'm probably not getting out of here, so I might as well be the king of this place.
Yeah.
You know, and I like that he's got this random wish that he wants to go to Tasmania. Like, you know, what's your goal? I'm going to go to Tasmania. I just like how weirdly random that is.
Like, I can imagine that his life has been shit right through, that he's been brought probably in a trailer park.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think that's what you...
And everything. And he's read a book when he... The one book he's read when he's been a kid has maybe been a holiday magazine, and he's seen Tasmania.
Yeah, maybe. Thought,
this is a beautiful place, and I'd love to go there and get away from all the shit.
Well, in an earlier version of the script, apparently he wanted to go to Fiji and open up a hot dog stand and breed horses with cows and horses. With horses and horses.
Sheep and a cow. Yeah. So they outline the demands, which are basically we want the districts closed and we want the Federal Employment Act, which doesn't seem too much to ask, but we'll get there.
Like, it's an unrealistic demand for hostage
for it to be done instantly. Yeah,
for what they're holding, for the few people they're holding hostage, it's unreasonable.
Yeah,
because you get that they're in one sanctuary district, and we've got to, and they say that this there's other sanctuary districts. So, is there more sanctuary districts just in San Francisco? Or are these all over the entire country in America?
Yeah, I mean, Cisco says...
Or is this a worldwide thing that this sanctuary district...
I mean, Cisco says every major city in America had one, so...
Yeah, I feel like this is just, like, the something which happens to resonate. Like, I don't think that this incident alone is big enough to have them deciding to stop it all. But it's like, when you get the video footage out, which I think the suggestion is here... Anything like that's always suppressed, so you can't.
Yeah.
And anyone who's attempted probably has people going, "Fuck you, we're gonna like take down your fucking district." You know, whereas he put the people in front, like he put the every man in front of the camera. He put like, and yeah, probably let's face it, the subtext is white guy in front of the camera. I think that subtext there. He put someone who was like, right, you can villainize all these other people. Fucking try and villainize this guy. Like, it's like Tim Walz becoming the vice presidential nominee.
Yeah.
The Democrats.
Yeah.
I think that's very powerful. Like, you try and say why he's a bad guy, and you will insult so many people who are the people you want to.
Yeah, that's it. And Cisco does point that out. He doesn't come out with it in so many words, but when he's talking to BC about why it needs to be he says he's the guy next door, but what he doesn't say is, look, I'm black and you're a scrubber, which is...
It's everything that Star Trek's always done over the years. I bet there was a version of the script where he did call out that he was black, and then it got censored because at the time we weren't ready to say that on TV. You go back to the 60s, there was so much else which Roddenberry wanted to do, but he had to hide stuff in metaphor, like the guys
with
half blackface, half white. These examples. Yeah, it's what they had to do at the time, but I think if you do that now, that would be pointed out.
And I love where Cisco does get a bit badass at everyone, like where he's talking to BC, he's like, I don't like your hat. But then he also drags the guard aside and basically says, look, stop fucking about, because he's going to do something. So I love how he's doing both sides of it. He's an equal opportunities bollocker in this bit, is Sisko.
I think there's also something about, like, they never shy away from what is right in this situation. But I think there is something to what they're doing here of saying, it's like, right, these people, even though they're bigoted, even though they're on the wrong side of history, if you're going to change things, you have to somehow bring those people forward as well. They're not just going to disappear. And I think that's the crisis we have, you know, right now, and in America especially. It's like, right, those Trump supporters aren't going to go away. You've got to show a better world, and you've got to exemplify that. You've got to stop all the fake news, and you've got to actually permeate that kind of bubble of bullshit. Because otherwise, those people don't disappear. That's what Trump showed. All these people, since the war, basically, in America, have been shoved to one side, told to shut up, rightly so, about their racist bullshit. But in that void, they've bred and they've become more. And then all it took was a wanker like Trump to appeal to them, to bring them out of the shadows.
Yeah, absolutely.
We need to bring those people in the shadows in the right way of showing them how life can be better, how things can be better if everyone's brought to the table.
It amazes me on my feed. Like, I've got people on my friend feed from when I used to play a game years ago from America. And it's amazing reading some of them. And that they've gone past the part where they tried to justify Trump now. So now, because I think they've realised that they can't justify him anymore, because it makes them look like complete and utter dicks to try to justify some of the stuff he's doing. So now you have that, they're trying to justify, no, you have to be still vote for him so we don't have Kamala.
Oh, yeah, that's, like, I mean...
And it's not like, what?
I mean, that's when you see, like, when it becomes just grasping at straws, the politics. But anyway, so the next comedy vignette is O'Brien and Kira meet the hippies, who actually see them beam up, which is fun.
I'm all in favour of all of this, by the way. All these easy little vignettes are so much fun.
And give me you more almost...
of that, give me less of everything on the Defiant. It's shit. Everything in these beam out moments is fun.
Yeah, you almost wish one of the hippies said, "Whoa, beam me up, Scotty." It would have been a bit too meta, but that's the sort of thing they might try now. Oh, it's the sort of joke Doctor Who would risk.
Get cheap to disappear in that scene.
I think if Star Trek did this episode again, and you could get away with it now doing these metaphors.
Yeah.
I went back to, say, 1968, 69.
Yeah.
You could get a hippie coming out with going, "Oh, beam me up, Scotty," when they saw that.
I think you could get away with that now in the landscape of TV. But anyway, still, it's a great fun scene. And it's probably the last bit of fun we have, because the intensity just sort of ratchets up from this point. So Dax goes into the Sanctuary District and she gets caught. Now
can we just... I just want to point out here, because we mentioned about the uniforms and the claim, and we can assume that Star Trek uniforms maybe have... they can keep them cool or keep them warm. And they've maybe got special engineered nanoparticles that can clean themselves if they get covered in shit.
Oh, I'd buy that, yeah.
But Dax climbs up out of a sewer, and she
literally
admits
a sewer,
she admits that she's walked through a sewer, and she gets out the sewer and she rubs her side and gets a little bit of dust off. 21st century fashion clothing for the rich is bloody good.
It
reminds me of, I think it was Spy Hard. It was one of the Leslie Nielsen. It might have been.
I remember that one.
Where he goes like he's covered in soot and shit all over his face, and he just goes like that, wipes his hair back, and everything disappears. It's exactly that. It's exactly
But it's like, no, you have not just climbed through a sewer. Don't even try, say you have.
Can I also ask?
But it's how she gets out, and she goes like that to wipe.
Yeah, it's not. It's not.
Does stop it. Right, I'm clean now.
It's not the end of the Shawshank Redemption, is it? You know.
Can we also cover, like, while we're on Dex, because let's face it, the guys are war heads with this plot. But when she gets out of there, I don't know, I'm jumping in a bit, but when she gets out of there, she then goes up to the guy and gets him to televise everything. But and maybe Elliot, because you have sorted out every problem I've had with this episode so far. So I'm tasking you with this one. In the original history, you've got Bell does that all by herself. He doesn't have a Dax there, basically.
Yeah. So
are we just saying this is a predestination time paradox?
No.
It works. If not, in the original history, why did the guy put everything on TV?
He did. I can answer this one.
Oh.
It wasn't necessarily him who did it in the original timeline, but Gabriel Bell was able to hack it or something. And that's what Sisko says that to Bashir. He says maybe it was something Bell did. And that's
nice.
So we have to assume that Bell was able to do it in some way.
Yeah, because like they tried to broadcast it, didn't they? And they got cut down.
Yeah.
And the feed was stopped. So we've got to assume that Gabriel Bell.
Well, Sisko says,
hack it.
Yeah, Sisko says it must be something Bell did, so we don't know exactly what he did, but yeah, that was the differing factor.
It's some interface magic.
It doesn't also exclude the fact that it could be predestination time break. That's Sisko.
It doesn't exclude it.
It doesn't exclude that.
This is what always happened.
What it potentially suggests, though, is that this rich billionaire guy, he might go on to become even more important to history now because he's done this and he shouldn't have done it the first time.
What it could be is that Star Trek would not have existed without this happening, because you have the Gabriel Bell picture is Sisko, and that's how things going, because we have the jump that we don't see Kieran O'Brien do is when they go to 2048.
Yeah, we don't see that one.
And it's all shit, and so much has gone wrong because they haven't had these rights. Mm-hmm. And maybe we needed Sisko to be involved with the predestination paradox of Jax.
Well, maybe that's it.
Maybe that's what caused Starfleet to come about in the first place.
Yeah, maybe Gabriel Bell always looked like Sisko. We don't know. But anyway, when Dax gets taken into like the headquarters, a nice little detail is BC takes his hat off, like, so he's showing this old sort of chivalry, like, you know, you take your hat off when a lady comes in the room, which I usually find just pretentious and patronizing, but I think it's quite a cute character thing to him. He's not necessarily the nicest guy, but he thinks that's the done thing, so he takes his hat off.
It's something that nowadays you only tend to do that with a funeral procession, don't you, where you take your hat?
Yeah.
Which is also incidentally why you don't have to wear a motorcycle helmet if you're in a procession for a motorbike.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Because it's judged as you're taking your hat off in respect.
Right, didn't know that.
And yeah, it's one of you have to let the police know in advance that you're going to be there going riding in a funeral procession. And all the way there, you have to wear your helmet.
I did not know that. That's interesting. I'm just wondering also, like, it could be, it kind of plays into the whole thing of, like, this is BC recovering, like, again, in my head canon anyway, that this is, he's recovering who he used to be. And I think that's suggested in the text. It's like the whole thing of, like, maybe he was raised to, like, you know, his parents were old fashioned. His parents would have lived through a time where it might have been that you did doff your hat. And, like, I feel like he's kind of been, he's being reminded of, like, his granddad maybe showing
that. I think,
like, when he gives the hat to the kid and goes, shit, you do look better in that. You know, like,
you
stuff like that.
You do actually tend to get, actually, with a lot of the working class, lower class, that in this country, that you are taught manners, even though you might... in England especially, we have almost this ingrained thing that you're meant to be respectful to higher classes. It's almost an English reaction he has to
see what you're saying.
I almost see it as well as the thing of, like, when you've got money, it's like assumed you're well mannered. It's assumed.
Yeah.
Whereas I think people who are lower class, just like normally by this country's
standards. Well,
I think it's almost like, no, we'll prove we're better than them. We respect people.
How many...
We treat people right. I think there is a pride to doing things the correct way. Like you're it's almost like saying my income doesn't dictate who I am. It doesn't dictate what respect.
No, but we're meant to, like, it is. It's a thing where you don't, like, it's the same in English. I don't know.
Yeah, that's the thing.
But we have to adapt to
they do in America. It's
because if it's BC showing deference because he thinks she's of a higher class, I don't like that as much. I quite like it that in some way he thinks he's been charming, even though it's quite patriarchal to assume that, you know, doffing your cap to a lady, you know, it's like, bugger off.
It's a suggestion to me that, like, he has always been shown these manners.
I like the idea.
And that's what comes out later. It's like, this is the seeds of what's all that's within him still. Like, being a decent guy, caring about things, still with him. He's trying to deny it. Like, the work he's doing is almost of pretending he doesn't care. And that's what Fasani is coming out, whereas deep down he does, as we see later in the episode. I feel that's, like, that's the sign of that coming out.
That's probably a message of the episode, though, isn't it? That we have these people in these positions who are very stereotypical of, right, I'm the thug on the street. I'm the tough guard. I'm this. But as the episode goes on, they find they have got things in common. And they actually find that you can respect each other and not have to hate each other.
Exactly, everybody's a person, you know. Yeah. And, yeah, they've kind of forgotten it. And I like the way they deal with the little subplot with, you know, the guy who clearly has learning difficulties, mental health problems, what all of the above.
Clint Howard.
Yeah, Clint Howard.
Clint Howard! Of course, the OG. He's from the...
Yeah, he's...
Like,
he's in everything as well.
Common Knight Manoeuvre.
One of the first episodes ever of Star Trek. He's in there as the hyper-intelligent baby.
Yeah, Baylock.
And he appeared in... He's been in...
He was in Discovery recently.
Another episode along the way, I think. So
he's been in lots. I can't think of all of them.
But it's almost like he is the touchstone of Star Trek. He is the same thing. You see him in so many different films, and he is always that touchstone of, like, it's those character actors who hold together. And he is the ultimate example of that.
Yeah.
And he plays such... Like, this could have been just a really silly minor character, but he is so sweet in this character. Like, you fall in love with him.
Even when
Dax says the most stupid thing, she's winning him over. He's going, like, oh yeah, those aliens, they're really bad, but you're good. I can tell. I like you. And she goes, you know what? I'm an alien. Why the fuck would you say that? He's just been won over to you. And he said he doesn't like aliens. You are so lucky that he then goes, oh yeah, but you're one of the good ones. I mean, Dax, she just lucks backwards into that.
She does that. Yeah. It's a good sequencing that it plays into the broader themes that, like, they go and instead of beating him up to get it, they're kind to him.
Yeah.
And they show him a bit of time and attention, and that's all it takes. He's not taking it out of malice. It could almost be frivolous within the bigger episode, but instead it adds to what we're getting everywhere else, which is great. And then, yeah, this is... Oh, just before we get to where it all kicks off and everything, another issue I have with the time travel is that they can only do 10 jumps, and they're going, right,
we'll
go
to...
Right. There's 10 options, and they can only do 5 or 6. I think they should have had a more methodical approach. It's like, firstly, you go to the one in the middle, chronologically, and you see if the timeline's okay, and if it is, you know it's in the next half. If it isn't, you know it's in the previous half.
Yeah.
So even assuming that they are doing something like that, they go, we've been to 2048, and the timeline's been messed up, but we've only got these options. Okay,
we've only got one left by this point.
One left, but they've still got a few options.
Three options.
So look at those three options and cross-reference it and go, is there anything that really stands out that could have knackered the timeline? I don't know, like maybe a major riot that caused huge social change. You know, maybe we should go for that one instead of a week last Tuesday,
like,
you know?
I'm going to imagine, because the first time we see him go back is 1920, whatever.
Yeah.
So let's say it's 1920, and we know they go to 2048.
Yeah.
So let's say it can
and we know they go to the 60s.
Let's say it can go to 2100. So let's say it's between 1900 and 2100, and you've got six jumps that you can make. So where should we go first? 1920.
Yeah,
Go second? Oh, 1960.
It's like, no.
And they've obviously done two more jumps between here, because after 20...
Yeah, they're running out of options.
They're running out, so there have been two more places.
And they are doing it...
Which have to be before 2024.
Yeah.
So they've maybe done 1980 and 2000.
Yeah, and then they go, right, we've been doing them chronologically so far, roughly every 40 years. Oh, let's just jump 2020, 2024. We don't bother with that one. All gone. Just do it logically.
Logically, right. We've got a 200-year split. Let's go to...
Middle.
To middle. 2020. Sorry, 2000. Right, everything's fine. Okay, let's go to 2050. Shit. 2025. Did something happen in between these two now?
May I just suggest, though, I feel like we've got two people who are, like, if you include Odo as well, three people who are super intelligent in their own field. Now, Odo, okay, I think if they included him in the conversation, it's pretty hard to exclude the fact that he's a detective. He would have worked it out. However, the other two of them, just imagine they didn't talk to Odo, because he's got pissed off with him. Like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, volunteering for this mission. So he's gone off in a crump. You've got an engineer who, like...
Right, maybe he needs to go be liquid for a bit.
Maybe
he
did.
He's maybe gone. They're back in time. They're stuck. Everything's gone to shit. Starfleet's back.
Yeah, I'm off.
Sorry, guys. I need to go rest in my bucket for 11 hours.
All I'm saying is sometimes you can have people who are super intelligent in one field, like, will miss something so obvious in another. Like, in Sherlock Holmes, they always said that it was like he will learn everything about a subject which he needs to know about for a case, but he won't know that the Earth revolves around the sun, as mentioned in the
episode,
I believe. So I think this is the same. You've got O'Brien, he's super intelligent about engineering. You've got Kira, super intelligent about war and about kind of like the tactics. But they're super dumb about time travel and working out what time zone something happened. They don't know history, and they didn't think to look it up. Like, it's a really dumb thing that super intelligent people did.
It has just occurred to me, actually, that they might not know what time periods each of the things takes them to, which does solve the issue. If they're just picking out of a hat, effectively.
They say the time.
It must know where he can go, because on the last chance he goes, there's only three more places that we could go to. Choose 2024. So there's obviously...
Oh, you're right. Yeah. I was trying to dig them out of the hole, but they were
wrong. There's obviously 10 places that it could possibly be.
Yeah.
And the waste the first five.
I'm going to go with the Taskmaster explanation. If you ever watch that show, you get some people who you know are like super brains. They are so intelligent, and they do something so fucking stupid, something which is obvious to everyone else. I think it's that. It's like they're so intelligent, but they feel under the cosh because they know they've only got a certain amount of time to solve it before time catches up with them. And they make some stupid errors because they're very intelligent, but not in this particular area.
Yeah.
That's so, my MacGuffin.
Before they actually raid the building, then, I think it's good that we see this character of that issue reporter, the woman who's talking to the governor, and we see that she's actually trying. Like, it's showing that people further up the societal chain.
She's the police captain.
She's the police captain. So there are people who are actually trying, but it's this faceless governor who refuses to do anything.
Which is because we have a female coloured police captain.
There we go.
And I think there's definitely that thing of, like, even when you've got a system which is corrupt, a system which is evil, I would go so far as to say, there are sometimes some really great people who just get in a position where they're forced to toe the line, but they would do anything to end this.
Yeah, and they see
this opportunity. And that's another reason why it makes it more plausible that this could happen, that this could make the difference, because it's like something undeniable. And they don't, like, there's so many people who are involved in the administration who don't want to deny it. They've just been forced in that position because of the way society is.
And yeah. Arguably, you are seeing it sort of go all the way through the class chain, like, really. If we say that the security guys, the Dick Miller character, is your working class character, then we go up to the police captain, who's ostensibly middle class, and then we've got rich dude. So it is showing that people at every level of society are willing to help when they actually
and it's actually taking notice of in, what's
engage
happening.
With a bit of empathy. Yeah,
well, it's when they meet the actual people they can't anymore believe the bullshit of the state saying it's like these are the enemy people. These people don't want to work. These people don't care about society.
Yeah,
when they're met with them face to face, it's a bit harder to deny it. It's a bit hard to deny these people.
That's it.
That's what our press does, isn't it? It's what we call culture wars. It's like, we're meant to hate disabled people now because they claim benefits. Well, yeah, it's so they should. They need help. We're meant to hate single mothers because they have three kids, so they're claiming benefits. Well, they can't help circumstances. These things happen. But culture wars, and we see it on the front pages of our press, after time, that this is who we are meant to hate this month.
Yeah.
Hate this person. And it's always, you've got the poor people, working class people, are meant to hate other poor people.
Oh, yeah.
It's the root of their problem. And it isn't. No, it's the rich people who have all the fucking money who are where it isn't equally distributed that is causing the problems and their policies causing problems. They're telling us that we have to hate somebody else we've got to hate somebody who's slightly worse off than us because they're the reason we can't be a bit better off.
Exactly.
And the biggest magic trick they do is like getting pensioners hanging people on benefits, whereas like the biggest slice of the pie of benefits, which is a tiny amount of the pie of the budget.
Yeah.
The biggest part of that tiny slice is pensions and stuff. But they get pensioners who are like, read the Daily Mail, who hate people on benefits. Like, I hate to tell you this, like, and you've earned it, don't get me wrong. Like, we should pay out pensions and stuff. But like, they've got you hating people on benefits. Like, I don't know what's here.
So none of this helps Sisko, who... We get the raid, and Sisko takes a bullet, which we have to assume that would have been where Gabriel Bell died.
Well, let's be fair here, because there's a moment of tension that's put into the episode here, because we get to see Sisko get shot and go down, and they do leave it several minutes before it's revealed that he's not dead.
True.
I'm going to still go with Predestination Time's paradox. This was always what happened. I don't think the original Bell would have died. I think he always died when he died.
I think the original Bell died because he's slightly different build to Sisko. So where it just said...
There we go,
it had gone straight through his heart.
No, I think the original timeline... The original timeline before Sisko went back, the original Bell was like, just watch the guy get shot. It's like... What? You're expecting me? So any of you could have jumped in front of that bullet. Why are you expecting me to have done it?
Yeah, Bell was actually a right liar. He was like, I did it all. I mean, in terms of, I think for 90s TV and for 90s, presumably set a TV PG rating, if not even a G rating, it's reasonably intense. I mean, I think if this was done now, we'd get a much more intense view of it. And you know,
this is very much 90s TV.
It is. And I think
TV. And TV has altered a lot. But
it has.
It's a really, really good story.
I think it's done really well. The bits of the riot that we do get, I think they would have leaned on it more.
I've got to
now.
Say, I think this tells a really good story, and I think
it does. I agree.
And it still stands up as an episode.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think it says a lot that a lot of modern TV relies on the effects and the violence more for the episode than the story. whereas this could just tell a story without having to have loads and loads of violence.
But what I would
do the same job.
What I would say is, I mean, I agree with you guys that if you told it now, well, we've all said it throughout the episode, if you told it now, you'd be a bit more on Front Street with some of the themes, especially the racial stuff, which I think at the time they weren't ready for them to be open about that stuff, but it's so there in the subtext, as it always has been in Star Trek. However, there is, I can't think of another episode where the time catches up with the time the episode's based in, of not only Star Trek, but any show, where, because usually all that happens at that time is you laugh at how badly they got it. And we have had a bit of fun at that.
All right, where were we flying cars in 2015? Yeah. I mean, like, you know.
The technology doesn't exactly match up, but the themes are fucking...
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, this is harder than I've ever hit. I've never enjoyed this episode so much. I've never felt connected to this episode as much. I've never thought it was as hard-hitting a social commentary as it does when it hits the time, and it's fucking spot on. It's
what's
really,
scary.
It's so is, much so well.
Is that in another 30 years, if a kid watches this, their parents will have to tell them, no, that wasn't actually made in 2024.
Yeah.
You know, that the similar things happen, but not exactly that. But yeah, there will need to be someone to explain this is not what happened.
It's not a million miles away from if we got another 5 years of the Tories instead of Labour, we could be very close to that.
By 2030. You know that
and if Trump had got back in 2020 instead of Biden, America could be very close to that the way they were going.
And it could still happen now. Like,
yeah.
Get in. Labour government, as much as I'm trying to be hopeful, they've not gone in with the hope I hope they would. They're more going with the harsh, like, cuts and realities and stuff. And
What's scary is the Labour government have gone in, and they're not telling us lies, which we've got accustomed to that.
Well, that's true, but I'm just saying, it's like, even with...
But the scary thing is, because they're not telling the truth, because they're telling the truth, it's giving the right-wing press loads of ammo to come at them because this, and it's Labour, and they're blaming them for everything. It's like, and it's how many people are going to believe the right-wing press.
I thought, don't want to get into the weeds with it too much, but my point was more mainly, it's like, you do have a choice when you go into government. It's like what you do and what you kind of prioritize. And they prioritized reducing the debt and getting, you know, that under control. You could have chosen to put in some good news things into bolster public program, and they have not made that choice. And I'm not like legislating on that. I'm just saying, it's like when a new government comes in and doesn't offer something more hopeful, it does possibly leave some area for the right wing to rise. And like, you know, so this could still happen through that. It could still happen with Trump being reelected in America. There is so much which could happen wrong.
When there is, I mean,
so easily. And that's why it's so prescient is my main
point. I mean, the sad fact is, we may not have walls built around them, but there are areas that are not a long way from this. Yeah. And people are not forced into them in the way that they are in these sanctuary districts, but they are forced into them in terms of where affordable housing or where housing that's provided by the state is. And, you know, a lot of the issues that we see here, yes, the exaggerated slightly through a lens, but it's not as slightly as I would have liked. Like when I watched this first time as a kid, I thought, you know, we know Star Trek's got a dark future. Our 2024 isn't going to look like that. And then we get here and my 2024 looks way too similar to this and way more similar than I thought it would when I first watched it. And that's on us. We've not done well enough to make sure we don't end up there.
You can even go like so far as to say it's almost like it feels like some people watched this episode and said, hold my beer. It's like, oh, so you think we're going to put them in disarray with our own country? No, we're going to send them off to Rwanda. Like, you think we're going to put people in disarray? No, we're going to separate parents from their children to deport the parents and leave it so we don't have enough paperwork to reunite the children and their parents later. These are things that have happened
around,
which are darker than this episode, you know, in
That's it. This is a cautionary tale, but it's a cautionary tale that we need to heed perhaps even more so than when it was first aired. And that's scary. When you put something like this out into the world, the idea is that the more people grow from it, the further away from it you get. And it's a sad indictment that we're dangerously close to it.
It's like what they say. I've not read the books, and I'll hold my hands up there straight away. But with The Handmaiden's Tale, it's meant to be fiction and a scary story of a future America. It's not meant to be a manual for how the Republican Party wants America to be, which is what they're using it as.
Project 2025 is that, but with
pretty much. Well, I think before we get too bogged down in real life politics and depress everyone, we will wrap up there. But
can we just say that we can't just wrap up now because it would leave everyone in suspense. So what we will say is that Kieran O'Brien do go back to 2024.
Yes.
They find Dax, they make contact. Sisko doesn't die from his gunshot wound. He gets better. They're being back to the Defiant. Everything's back to normal. For some strange reason, Dr. Bashir can't get him into sick bay and operate on him and make him better from a gunshot wound.
We haven't built a sick bay yet.
And make him better from a gunshot wound. So he has to. So the episode ends with Sisko convalescing in his dressing gown in his.
Work. I like that he's just there in his pajamas. Like, I've had a rough couple of days. I am not even getting out of my jammies today.
Yeah. But it is, it's sort of like, it's almost treated that his convalescing, how he should do, how he would nowadays with a gunshot.
Thermal regenerator.
On a TV show from the 90s from a gunshot wound. Gunshot wounds are a lot more serious than TV ever makes them out to be.
Can I throw in, maybe he, like Bashir checked and it wasn't hitting any vital organs, he was going to be safe to go back to station. Maybe Sisko chose to wear that. So, like, I want to fucking feel what he would have felt. I want to actually experience this for a minute.
Oh, Gabriel Bell would not have been lying around in silk pajamas, I'll tell you that. Did you see what he was wearing?
I
was off to say, I do want to give big props to this, though, that Sisko did get shot, as we saw, but they didn't fall into the 80s and 90s stereotype that he carried on doing stuff for ages.
That's true.
And then at some point raised his top up to Bashir and he was caked in blood and went,
yeah,
I can't carry on now, mate.
Yeah, good point.
I'm going to throw one out as well. Because, we're, you know, Elliot rightly says, we can't leave him without that full explanation. I'm going to leave the viewers with this, or the listeners. The one thing that this episode does is it does end with, they've made this kind of like this moment. They put it on TV and everything, but everything isn't wrapped up. Still, shit is fucked up in the world, which will take years. Like they say it, like it'll take years for this to come. What Earth becomes in the utopian future. I would say the same of our world. Like, it's up to us if this ends with the riots we've had over the last few years, last few months here in the UK. It's up to us if we get to that hopeful future. We can just fucking, as a society, do better. We can make a decision to organize and to project this vision of the future, which is more hopeful. It is up to us still. We could still have this. Because I feel sometimes like it's like, yeah, but our rights didn't end that way. But theirs didn't. Theirs rights didn't end overnight with everything being okay. They've even said in the episode it took years for it to become what it was.
What year is First Contact?
2068, I want to say.
2068. So that's 20 years after where Bashir went to. Sorry, where O'Brien went to.
Yes.
And we know that sometime between 2024 and 2068, there's been a third world war.
Yes.
So.
Let's skip over that bit.
No, but we have to have a third world war before we get to the nice thing.
Yeah, we do.
So, O'Brien went to 2048. So we're going to shoot. 2048 was before the Third World War. 2068 was after. But he's saying that things were more fucked up in 2048, leading to a Third World War.
Oh yeah, good point. How bad were it there?
That he went to than what the Star Trek timeline was that in 2048. Plus, we saw it in.
Jeez, I was just trying to put a hopeful button on aliens. You have to bring it down.
Journey to Farpoint, Encounter at Farpoint.
Oh, the post-comic Court of Horrors, yeah.
Is that in the 2040s?
Something like that, yeah.
The Courts of Horrors. So it's gone beyond that, where you have the soldiers there all high as fuck with machine guns just shooting people in carts. And it's got worse than that.
All I was trying to do is send us out on a hopeful ending. Goes like, look, it's up to us. We can achieve this really utopian future. It'll all be great. And it's going, no, we'll have World War fucking III first or see if we don't. It's like, oh, for fuck's sake, man. I tried.
Anyway.
I think I've got a fair point in the Star Trek time.
You have got a fair point.
I tried. Elliot wants us to have World War III first. Fine. You and Putin enjoy.
Next week, we'll be back to talk about more Prodigy. In the meantime, you can get in touch with us all the usual ways. We're at RetrekPod. We're RetrekPod@gmail.com. We're on the various socials, including Retrek Model Studios on YouTube. Just
watch the back catalogue. Somebody started messaging me from one of the Star Trek model groups about man the cells for Voyager. Check them out, and I'm available to help you motorize your cells on Voyager to anyone watching who wants
there
to.
There we go. And Dr. Squee, what have we got?
Very quickly, tomorrow morning I'm going to be doing an interview with a TV presenter. She's on now the Martin Lewis Money Show, but in the past she's worked on children's TV shows and all sorts over the years. It's Angelica Bell, who's doing current campaign about the health benefits of pineapple in your food, but we're also going to talk about her career a little bit as well. It's going to be a good time.
Awesome. And
tomorrow night at 7.
And thanks for trekking with us this time. We will see you next time on the Retrek.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Go fast, kind of bell riots, drag off.
Yeah, bell riots.
Get us out of here, old man.